Welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now, a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of kptz.org.
Welcome to Nature Now for this first week of April. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and today I'll be talking with Allie Redman. Allie is the aquarist at the Port Townsend Marine Science Center. Welcome, Allie.
Thanks, Nan. I'm delighted to be here.
It's fun to be here. As is our standard pattern, first, let's hear this week's mystery sound. I'll give you a little hint. Like many animals at this time of the year, these babies are making their voices heard in the world. Well, what else is going on in the world around here? Spring is surely here. Listen for the sounds of the Pacific chorus frogs and look for the western skunk cabbage coming up in the moist woods and bogs. And new species, of course, are showing up at bird feeders all over town. The rufous hummingbirds are here. The white-crowned sparrows, of course. Both of those are easy to spot. Allie, help me out here. What else are local naturalists seeing?
Poking around North Beach last week, Wendy Feltham reported that she saw 35 blood stars.
It's a huge number.
The good news is that out of that 35, only one individual was showing signs of sea star wasting disease, which is great news. And the other really fascinating news is that she saw a red-banded commensal scale worm on one of the blood stars. It's the first one she'd ever seen. And these commensal scale worms are a symbiotic species, which means they don't feed off their hosts, but they live on them, attacking other species that the host might encounter.
Another one of Wendy's fun sightings was a large group, or maybe a colony, I don't know, of 15 to 20 shaggy mouse nudibranchs hanging around and under one rock. And some of them were laying masses of whitish eggs.
And if any of your listeners are near Hendricks and 11th Streets, listen for a ring-necked pheasant out in the field. Several folks have reported hearing it.
Now, in keeping with our theme of recent observations, I want to ask Allie about what she and others have collected recently for display at the tide pools and tanks at the Marine Exhibit of the Port Townsend Marine Science Center. And I know you opened last weekend. Give me some highlights. What have you found out there?
We've got a lot of really great things in the exhibits coming up this week. And my favorite, maybe, right now are pipefish. Pipefish are closely related to seahorses, but kind of a long, stretched out, thin version. They don't move around a whole bunch, and they hide out in the eelgrass, and they really mimic the eelgrass really, really well.
They're hard to spot in the tanks.
They are hard to spot. So it makes a kind of a fun game of can you find all of the pipefish in this tank? And I kind of like those kind of secret hidden treasures that you find so often in the marine environment.
We'll talk a lot more about Allie's job. Allie is an aquarist. First thing, Allie, what is an aquarist?
An aquarist is somebody who takes care of aquariums.
Well, that could be easy, right?
I look after both the kind of physical side of the tanks and the running of things, and also the collection of the animals and the care of the animals once they're within our facilities.
How did you come to this profession?
I've always been really interested in animal care. I used to be a zookeeper. And when I went to do my master's in marine biodiversity and conservation, I just started volunteering in our biology labs, helping to care for all of the research specimens and the animals being collected for the classes. Just really loved it. And then when I went on to work in other field stations and locations, I always spent a lot of time taking care of the tanks and the animals.
Is there something you enjoy most about being an aquarist?
You just get to work with so many interesting, strange, and beautiful things. You're constantly finding something new, learning something new. It's constantly new challenges as well.
I do have to admit here, I actually know Allie in her professional role because I volunteer, and many of you probably know this if you've listened to me for any length of time, volunteer out at the Marine Exhibit cleaning those tanks and helping take care of the animals. And one thing I can tell you about Allie is she is amazingly creative. She can find solutions to the most interesting things. Is there something that's the most fun thing about your job?
It's a hard one to pick. I think the most fun thing is solving the problems, like feeling like, oh, there's a problem here, even if it's a, is it a problem of plumbing and how do we fix a gurgling sound in the pipes? Or is it a problem of what is this animal and how do I take care of it? And then feeling like you've got those solutions. Mm-hmm. And then also it's just, it's so nice then when you've done all that hard work and then you see some kids come in on the weekend and see that hard work turn into somebody's lights just turning on in their mind when they realize the amazing things that are underneath the water.
Tell me more about some of the critters you've got out there now.
Our tanks are smaller than, say, you might see at Seattle Public Aquarium.
Sure, yeah.
So we tend to have a lot of juvenile fish. Just today we got in some tube snouts into the tanks that are really nice schooling fish. We have the pipe fish. We have lots of different types of gunnels. And we also have lots of invertebrates because I think they kind of tend to be underappreciated by the general public, but the invertebrates are so cool. We've got the anemones and the urchins, and they're so interesting, both their behavior and they're beautiful to look at. I could give you this just whole long running list of what's in the tanks right now, but I think really the best way to experience what's in the tanks is just to come down and have a look at it for yourself, because more important than their names are being able to observe them and their habitat and their behavior.
So is there a community of aquarists? Because I know if you get a creature in that you've not had before, you've got to figure out what it needs to survive and what it eats and what it likes and doesn't like. Is there a community of folks? Do you share information back and forth?
Yeah, there is. So like every sort of group of people these days, we do have online listservs that you can reach out and ask questions internationally about your different critters. I also keep in touch with aquarists that are working at other similar facilities, mm-hmm. so small facilities in the area, and we try to share information back and forth and on how things are going. And then, of course, reference books and,
sure.
and articles.
Yeah. A critter in the wild is probably feeding or searching for food most of the time. How often do you feed them and what kinds of things do you feed them?
Different animals have different methods of finding their food. Some animals, especially, say, small ones with tiny mouths, would just be eating constantly. And so it's important that we feed them a couple of times a day.
Okay, give me an example.
The pipefish or very small baby fish, mm-hmm. like right now I have a whole bunch of tiny flounder. Mm-hmm. They need to eat small food just all the time to keep up their energy levels. And then you have other fish, like say your sculpins, that most of the time they kind of sit back, they don't move a whole bunch, but they have a great big mouth. Mm-hmm. So that when something that is good prey happens to be near them, they can have a big meal in one go. A fish like that, depending on the water temperature and activity levels, only really needs to eat a good meal maybe three times a week. Mm. So it really depends on the animal.
What about the starfish and the sea urchins? What do they eat?
Most of our urchins are primarily algae or seaweed eaters. Mm-hmm. So we hand out seaweed to them at least twice a week, but most of the time I try and make sure there's some around in their tank that mm-hmm. they could go and help themselves
right.
to.
A little snack.
A little snack here and there, because the seaweed usually stays pretty fine in the tanks. And also, I'm always growing algae, as you know from helping to mm-hmm. clean the tanks.
There's always algae growing, yes.
There's always algae growing. So I see a lot of those algae eaters as helping me keep the tanks clean. And the sea stars, different species eat different things. In general, we do feed those 2 to 3 times a week. Mostly clam or fish, and visitors can experience that for themselves. If they come by on Saturdays at 2:00, they would have a opportunity to feed sea stars, the anemones, and the urchins.
Oh, fun. It seems like you're just constantly changing things around. What are you trying to create? What kind of experience for the critters as well as the human critters that come see?
I want the marine critters to be comfortable, to feel like they're safe, and still have them visible.
Mm-hmm.
For the visitors coming in, most importantly is that they have a wonderful time and that they associate marine creatures with good feelings. And then what I really want is for any person coming in, no matter what their knowledge level is when they come in, to leave feeling like they've discovered something new.
Mm-hmm.
For them to feel kind of a sense of wonder and awe.
So you mentioned the challenge of some of the critters like to kind of hide out under a rock or in a crevice somewhere, and the sort of balance of providing that for them and yet also providing the opportunity for someone to see them. Talk to me about one of those challenges.
Right now, we have a really fantastic type of octopus called a red Pacific octopus.
Which is not the great...
Not the giant Pacific octopus. This is a really neat species. It is, however, a nocturnal species.
Ah, yes.
It is in a darkened tank, and it has a nice little hole to hide in so that it feels happy and comfortable in there. But then what I've done is made sure that the hidey hole is pointed in such a direction that people can kind of look in and see the outline of octopus.
Ah.
So it's a little bit of a compromise.
Mm-hmm.
You get to see your octopus, mm-hmm. but the octopus also feels comfortable in its hidey hole.
Yeah. So how long have you been doing this at the Marine Science Center?
So I've been with the Marine Science Center since August of last year. And just recently went to being there for a full-time position and just recently moved to Port Townsend.
Oh, great. What are your dreams about what you would like the marine exhibit eventually to be?
I am a very detail-oriented person, and so my dreams tend to be very technical things, like I would love to have just a little bit more water flow, and I would love to have a sewer line. So really,
so the basics, right?
We have the basics already.
Okay.
For kind of some bigger dreams, I'd love to be able to combine all of our exhibits into one building so that people could appreciate everything without having to go to two different mm-hmm. areas. Always, any aquarist wants more tanks.
For those people who have not visited the marine exhibit, how many tanks are there?
There are 13 exhibit tanks, and then in the lab area, I have an additional 6 tanks at the moment.
There's a couple really small tanks, and then there's some big tanks that are sort of like piling.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got another tank that's a eelgrass tank.
Yeah, and those kind of the identities of the tanks do change a little bit based on what animals we currently have and what can work with our current setup and mm-hmm. what supplies and things we mm-hmm. have. So the identities of the tanks change a little bit. One of the things that is really the most challenging is that things that live in a habitat together tend to live there because they eat each other.
Oh, yes.
So you're kind of constantly playing kind of like a Tetris or checkers type game where you're thinking, we've got this animal. If we put it in the tank over here, it's going to eat that thing. So we'll move that thing to the tank over here. But then that thing's going to eat this other thing. Any new addition to the facility kind of makes a cascading change to a lot of different things. Or when something, it's not even a new addition. When things grow, when it's small, it's not going to eat its tank mates. And it gets a little bigger and it starts to get a taste for the shiner perch.
So you're kind of constantly managing, I was going to say behavior. It's not behavior.
It's like being the CEO of a big company, except for none of your employees can speak to you.
Let's say somebody comes to visit the marine exhibit and they've never been on the coast before. What would you want to make sure they saw at the marine exhibit?
One of the blessings of being a small facility is they definitely can see everything.
That's right.
I think for every person, it's a different thing that kind of triggers their sense of wonder and awe. Some people love the experience of seeing a marine organism react to them, so that when they touch an anemone and they see that the anemone will retract its mm-hmm. tentacles, or that when you wave your hand over a rock scallop, it will close up mm-hmm. because of the shadow. Other people are really fascinated with kind of the strange appearance of some of the crabs.
Or yeah, that don't look like anything people know on land. Yeah.
Other people get really impressed by how well the fish camouflage or hide themselves. Mm-hmm. For every person, it's a different thing that kind of brings that to them. So I just try and make sure that everybody sees a variety of what we've got mm-hmm. on offer, and then I watch for the light in their eyes.
Yeah, you mentioned the light in your eyes earlier. I like that thought. There are good reasons that you encourage people not to touch certain things, but what can you touch?
So there's a lot of things that people can explore. You can touch the anemones, the urchins, the sea stars. It's really fun to tickle a tube worm and see it retract back into mm-hmm. its shell. And some of the giant sea cucumbers are great because they look kind of pointy and spiky.
Yeah, because they're sort of orange and they've got yellow and orangey spikes on them. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when you touch them, you actually see that they're kind of soft and rubbery.
And so
they're
smooth
nice.
And slick. Yeah. Yeah.
And we do try to rotate animals so that no animal gets too over mm-hmm. touched.
You said you encourage people not to touch the fish and the crabs. I'm going to guess that's for the well-being of both the toucher and the critter being touched. Is that right?
Yeah, it definitely goes both ways. Some of those crabs, I'm sure a lot of crabbers out there know that a lot of our crabs, they pack a punch. Mm-hmm. They can really pinch you badly. And then the fish, they have a protective slime coat on their skin, and when they're handled, that can cause them to lose scales and kind of rough up that protective coating. Mm-hmm.
So I have one more question about the aquarium. I know a few years ago it was hit really badly, like the sea stars in the wild, and the aquarium lost a great many of the stars to sea star wasting disease. Are you getting stars back?
We do have sea stars in our collection. There are certainly not as many either in our collection or in the wild mm-hmm. as there were. Sea star wasting disease continues to be a problem. This also means that we limit our collecting because we want to make sure that there are a lot of them still mm-hmm. left out in the wild as well. We definitely still see sea stars around, both in the wild and in the collection, not to the numbers that they used mm-hmm. to be.
We could probably chatter quite a bit more about what's out there, but we need, I think, now to listen to that mystery sound again. Well, that was the chirping of baby river otters. As we all know, river otters sometimes bring forth groans from boaters who experience them rather unpleasantly on docks or the decks even of their boats sometimes. River otters are sometimes met with squeals of excitement when they're mistaken for sea otters, who are their truly seagoing and much, much larger cousins. The river otters are the otter we see around Port Townsend. It's a member of the weasel family. They're especially adept on water and on land, and they're not considered to be a marine mammal. Usually the otters are burrowing on land close to the water's edge, and the den typically has got many, many tunnel openings, one of which usually allows the otters to have an easy exit to the water. The female otters give birth in these underground burrows, typically producing litters of 2 or 4 pups born from essentially now through May. The young pups learn to swim when they're about 7 or 8 weeks old, and by late fall, they leave their moms to go establish their own territories. When you see a group of river otters in the wild, usually what you're seeing is the female and her couple of offspring. The males are usually solitary and don't hang out much with the otters after the breeding period. Well, let's look forward to see what's happening in the natural history world this upcoming week. Allie, tell us, of course, about the natural history exhibit and the marine exhibit.
So the Port Townsend Marine Science Center is now open on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from noon until 5. Come
on down.
That's
the best way to go see what we've been talking about today. And this week, on Thursday, April the 6th, help the Jefferson Land Trust and the Jefferson County Noxious Weed Control Board salvage native plants from an area near Port Ludlow and then plant them at Upper Snow Creek Preserve, where they're doing a lot of restoration. Also, volunteers are welcome to keep some of those salvaged plants for use in their own homes as well. You can find out more about this work party by going to the Jefferson Land Trust website.
On the morning of Friday, April 7th, you can join Admiralty Audubon for a birding field trip to Fort Flagler. Check out the Admiralty Audubon website for details.
And if plants are more your thing, also on Friday, April the 7th, you can join the Native Plant Society. Meet them at the Quilcene Ranger Station for an early spring hike along the Duckabush. You'll probably be able to see Oregon fawn lilies and the wonderful chocolate lilies along the trail. Go to the Native Plant Society website for more information.
On Saturday, April 8th, you can attend a training to be part of the Coast Marine Debris Program. You can help survey local beaches and collect data on the characteristics and location of debris. Data will ultimately be used to map the source and transport pathways of debris, as well as the potential harm to people, wildlife, and local coastal ecosystems. There is more information on the workshop and how to reserve your spot on the Port Townsend Marine Science Center website or at the University of Washington Coast site. By the way, COAST stands for Coastal Observation and Seabird Survey Team, and they've also expanded their program to marine debris now.
During this upcoming weekend, the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society is hosting their 14th annual Bird Fest. Field trips are planned for Squim Bay, Port Angeles Harbor, Edis Hook, Dungeness Spit, the Elwall River, Salt Creek, and also out at Nea Bay, as well as trips through wooded areas to view songbirds and locate owls in the evening. Boat trips to Protection Island are also planned. The Olympic Bird Fest is wonderfully timed to overlap that period of time when the wintering birds have not yet left and the beginning of the spring migrants is just starting. So in addition to field trips, birders may participate in presentations, workshops, and even a banquet. Check the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society website for more information. That's it for this episode of Nature Now. We hope you have enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news and information about the natural community where we live. Contact Nature Now hosts if you have comments, observations, or ideas, or even if you think you might be interested in joining our team of Nature Now hosts. Email us at naturenow@kptz.org. Nature Now airs at noon on Wednesdays, with repeats here on KPTZ at 91.9 FM, on Thursdays at 5 p.m. and Saturdays at 11:30 a.m. Recent podcasts are also available on the KPTZ website. Thanks for listening.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Today's closing music is Aquarius, sung by Ronald Dyson.